Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast, where we share spiritual and practical ideas for how to live family life with a beautiful, self-sacrificing love. Today, we are joined by Lindsay Zitzman, a writer and certified life coach who shares from a biblical, trauma-informed, and experiential perspective to equip others to heal, overcome their challenges, and live every day through the lens of Scripture. Lindsay will be discussing how we can help our children learn to heal and forgive. Thank you, Lindsay, so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to ask you about how you came into this passion for teaching or for helping children and families overcoming trauma. And how did that all begin for you?
It's kind of a long story. So long, in fact, that I am actually writing a book about it. Oh, so I won't give you all the details here. Maybe more of the Cliff Notes version, if you will. So really the main driving force for me behind my trauma work are my own experiences and the experiences of my son. It wasn't until more of my adult years that I experienced my own trauma. I had a really wonderful upbringing. I grew up in a two-parent home, a Christian family, homeschool family. We lived on a farm, really idyllic. It wasn't perfect, but you know, just everything that you would want growing up. We weren't without struggles. There were things, but it really shifted when I moved away from home at 17, a little bit young to be moving out on my own. And admittedly, I was a bit naive kind of to the ways of the world and things that could happen out on your own. And I like to say that my story is kind of one from good girl, bad girl, broken to redeemed. That's kind of the flow that it took. So growing up, you know, I wanted to be a missionary, you know, all those things. I was very active in Sunday school and youth group, on missions trips, things like that. There were some key things in my life that shifted for me. I dealt with a lot of confusion kind of surrounding my faith. And I didn't walk away from God, but just questioned. And it kind of opened me up to making some poor decisions when I did move out on my own. So I got into the wrong crowd, which quickly just landed me in some situations where I was pretty vulnerable. And when I was 18, I experienced a sexual violation that was very traumatic for me. And that really set the stage for some very dark years in my life. You know, I covered up the feelings of pain with alcohol for a while, kind of got into the partying scene, pretended everything was fine when really it was not fine. And I can vividly remember one day just driving down the road and the pedal, like the brake pedal on my car felt kind of sticky. And I just remember thinking, that's okay. I'm just going to let this go and crash into the side of the building. You know, I mean, that's the point that I was at with feeling so hopeless and the despair that I felt. And I didn't reach out to people. People didn't know what I was going through. So on the surface, everything was fine. I was going to school, college, going to my job, but I wasn't okay. And this really set me up. I ended up in a pattern of really unhealthy relationships for the next decade, whether it was friendships, dating, or marriage. Everything was pretty destructive. And it was such a journey. Ultimately, I mean, there's a lot to share in those years, but I won't go into all that now. But ultimately, I ended up married to someone who was in recovery from drug abuse when I met him. And sadly, there was just things that happened that sent him into relapse pretty shortly after we were married. If you know anything about the drug world, you know how crazy and chaotic things can be. So I was in this relationship and things just got crazier. You know, over the course, even leading up to that, I had experienced relationships with all forms of abuse, emotional, verbal, sexual, physical. There was just a lot that I had experienced. And so I had just really become, you know, in this season where I was experiencing the effects of being with someone who was struggling with drugs, just a lot of breakdown, I was just in survival mode. And in the middle of that, I had child, which is not an ideal setting to bring a child into, but here we were. And eventually we exited that situation. It took a lot of time. There's a lot to that story as well. But because of what he endured and what I endured during the pregnancy, it set him up later when, and at the time, so we were no longer in this relationship when I discovered this, but I didn't know a lot about trauma at the time, even though I had been living with its impact, the effect of it for years. And, you know, it's one thing to go through it yourself, but when you know that your child has experienced something and all of a sudden here we need to heal from something. I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase, a worried mom does better research than the FBI. That was certainly true for me. So when he received this diagnosis, I thought, I've got to learn everything I can. And so I just dove all in and learned everything I could about trauma. And this was a lot of years ago, about 9 years ago, I believe. And so the narrative around trauma and, you know, in the mainstream world was not nearly where it is right now. A lot of the research was really clinical. There wasn't a lot of people making it very accessible to the everyday parent. Some were, but it was kind of hard to find. And so ultimately, everything I learned, it really brought a lot of healing in my life. And God really took me on a journey of setting me up with wonderful people. I found counselors who helped, and my family was so supportive once we, you know, everybody knew what was happening, and got us connected to the right people. But this process of learning about trauma and how to help my son heal really opened my eyes to the need to how many people have experienced traumatic experiences and are not getting the help that they need. So the first thing that I did, I took all this information and I started writing. I started blogging about it and really just wanted to, for myself and for others, make this information easier to understand and more accessible just for your everyday parent who is going through hard things and their children. A lot of the behaviors children display if they've been through trauma are pretty extreme. And it can be really hard to figure out what's going on. And the last thing a parent wants to do or can do when they're dealing with the impact of trauma is wade through these technical jargon-filled studies to learn about it. So I just wanted to make it more accessible. And I got a really good response to that. So that was one part, and really the biggest driving force behind this work. But the second part of it is that I am remarried to just a wonderful man. And after we got married, we really felt the call to foster care and adoption. And as we went through that process, there's more training. And so you learn more about trauma and things like that. But with every child that we've had through our home, it's the impact of trauma is just so obvious. And it really does require a different way of parenting, a different lifestyle to help them heal in the best way. And I just started talking with more people, and people just really wanted help with how do you do this? How do you implement it? And for themselves, how do you heal from your own things? There's so many layers to it. And often when you're parenting children who have been through hard things, it stirs up your own hard things. So I've done kind of a mixture of helping parents with their own things, but then also kind of guiding them through helping their children heal from things. So that's the short version.
Yes. No, and I think it's very important. You mentioned how, you know, you grew up in a home where your parents were together. You lived on a farm, homeschooled, the idyllic life, as you said. But to experience trauma, it still can happen even in the midst of the good. So you had briefly touched on how children display their trauma. So what would be some kind of, signs that a child has experienced trauma, even in the midst of like families that, you know, are doing fine upon appearances?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of children who have been through traumatic experiences display high levels of anxiety or fear, anger. Sometimes it comes out in anger. So very big behaviors, things that are more pronounced than kind of the average child would display. For us, with foster care, you know the background. And if there's foster care and adoption, you know that trauma has happened in some form. Just being removed from the home and being placed in foster care is a trauma in itself. So knowing the history kind of helps guide some of that. But as you said, just if it's an average family, if there's a shift in behavior, that's really not typical for them, that could be kind of a sign that something has occurred. Hypervigilance. When kids are going through traumatic experience, it elevates the stress hormone called cortisol in the body. And it really sends them into a state of fight or flight. I'm sure you're familiar with that phrase. For it to be considered trauma has to be a pretty big experience that has a long-lasting impact. Big behaviors, sleep issues are a very common thing that we see, whether it's not sleeping at all or it's night terrors, things like that. And food can be an issue as well, too. Just seeking something for comfort, just trying to feel okay. In our case with foster care and stuff, sometimes the food things are a result of having not had enough, those kinds of things. But those are some typical things that we see in children. It's also important to know kind of what might cause trauma. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are kind of surprised to learn that, a divorce, even if it's kind of a nice divorce, to use the term, where there's not a lot of fighting and things, that kind of change in a family dynamic is traumatic for a child. Big moves can be traumatic. If a child has to leave everything that's familiar to them, it can feel like a death. Death of a loved one can be a trauma that children experience as well. And so just watching for the shift in behaviors and kind of length of time. If it's something that goes on and on longer than you would expect, that might be a clue as well.
So that's how you would differentiate between a child who might just be having a hard time versus mm-hmm. an actual traumatic experience.
Right. And it's really interesting because two people can go through the same exact experience and one will be traumatized and the other won't. And there's a lot of factors that play into that. But a big one that we have learned is what is the support that the child has surrounding that event? If they're able to immediately have the loving care, support, listening ear of caring friends and family, it's much less likely that they're going to be impacted at such a high level. If they don't have anyone, or if they choose not to talk about it and just really internalize it, then it's going to grow and turn into this big thing. And it's so individualized, and there's just so many factors that we can't cover, right now. It's pretty fascinating how one can experience something so differently just based on the surroundings.
Yes. And have you ever experienced with, you mentioned, children that don't want to talk about it. Do you know, have you experienced that, or how do you help, let's say, parents with a child who doesn't want to talk about it? Like, do you just let them not talk about it? What does that look like?
So there's a lot that we can do to support them while they're not talking about it. Sometimes talking about it is re-traumatizing. So we have to be really careful how much we push for that. I hesitate to bring up my son's experiences too much just for the sake of privacy, but there was a period of time where he had experienced things that I wasn't aware of. And his behaviors got really intensified for a long time. And I was so confused because I thought I knew the things that he had been through and I didn't know the full story. So there was actually years where he didn't talk about it, and it really came out in behaviors, and I didn't know at the time. So I have a lot of, I wish I would have known and done these differently. But if people are seeing behaviors and don't know that a trauma has occurred, but these behaviors are really escalating and you don't know what, there's a lot you can do to help a child feel safe enough to get to the point of talking. And I know one of the things we talked about before was you wanted to know a little bit about the trust-based relational intervention and what that is. And it's a training intervention that's attachment-based. And I mean, it's so huge that we can't get into even the surface layer of it here. But they really talk about how to make children feel safe, bring them to a place of felt safety. So I'm kind of getting off course from your original question. I'm sorry, but if you don't know if your child's ready to talk, I would work on connecting and really making your child feel safe enough to get to that point and always keeping the door of communication open. We can ask small questions and kind of test the waters a little bit, see what their reactions might be to see if they're ready to start talking about things.
Great. Yes. And so you mentioned the trust-based relational intervention, and I know that we can't go into the whole thing, but do you have any, I guess, advice using that type of intervention to help your children overcome the traumas?
Right. So as I mentioned, you know, trauma, a child might not get to the point of experiencing the impact if they are surrounded by loving, nurturing adults. And that's really at the heart of what we call it TBRI is. It's really working on building trust with a stable, healthy adult. And like I said, bringing these children to a place of safety, feeling safe. TBRI has kind of three core principles that they work from, and it's to empower the child, connect, and correct. And you learn just a wealth of tools and helping your kids. It's pretty amazing. The woman, the main woman behind it is Dr. Karen Purvis, and she's sadly passed away, but she just did incredible work. And if people are interested, excuse me, to learn more about her, YouTube has just a wonderful resource of videos that you could just get small clips at a time. She has a book called The Connected Child, and that is my number one resource that I recommend to people if they want to start with kind of learning more about it. But also on YouTube, if you look up Empowered to Connect, there's going to be videos that really describe the methods and the tools that we use in TBRI.
That's awesome. And so, yeah, that kind of goes into my next question of helping parents to build connections with their children. So this month, we're talking about forgiveness. We're talking about healing. And how can parents help their children if they've experienced a severe trauma, or if they are just having a hard time? How can parents help children to forgive and then heal from those experiences?
Yeah. Forgiveness is such an important piece of healing from trauma. With children, we have to be really careful. And what I've learned is that we are really planting seeds for forgiveness with our children. You can't force a person to forgive. And there has to be a level of understanding before you can come to a point of being able to forgive something that has happened. And for me, you know, in my own journey, it took a long time as an adult to be able to get to that point. And it's really understanding the difference between what forgiveness is and isn't. And I think there's often misconceptions around it. And one of the biggest things that I think, even if we know on a logical level, like accepting it in our heart, that forgiveness does not mean that what happened to you was okay. And so when we're talking about this with children, that is such an important piece to remember, that what happened to them is not okay. And they have reason to feel hurt, to feel scared, to feel angry, to have grief, right? And so before we get to the point of forgiveness, we have to allow them to work through all of this stuff and feel those feelings, to grieve what was lost or broken or hurt. And a lot of that's done by modeling, right? So we lead by example. We have to be willing to do the work in ourselves and also kind of help them name the things that they're feeling, because kids can just get so stuck in their own minds. If they don't really understand something, they're going to make up a story that they understand. And it can be so clear to us, and we have no idea what they're really thinking. And it's pretty common for kids to feel like what happened to them was their fault. Mm-hmm. And so in talking about forgiveness, like, we have to be very careful that we're not saying, well, you just have to forget about it, forgive, you know, it's okay. You know, because it's very different looking at forgiveness for something traumatic or a big experience than it is for, okay, my sibling took that toy from me, you know, and I'm really angry with them, but okay, I forgive you. It's two very different things. And so if we're used to kind of dealing with more of those typical childhood, you know, sibling squabbles and forgiveness on that level, we just have to be very conscious of what the narrative they might be telling themselves is. So like I said, it's planting seeds. It's talking about what forgiveness is, how, you know, God forgives us, you know, for doing these things. We've all sinned. We've all done things that we shouldn't do. Just talking through in simple terms about what forgiveness is. Forgiveness doesn't mean that those bad things are okay. And hopefully once a child is old enough and mature enough to really understand, if we've planted those seeds and kind of laid a foundation, when they're ready, we can help kind of facilitate that or, you know, guide them to that place. And I would say the same goes for being ready to talk about what happened. A lot of it is laying the groundwork, planting seeds, saying, I'm here. I'm with you. You're not alone. For kids, one of the greatest gifts you can give them is time. Be present. And that's, you know, we live in such distracted culture with our phones, and we can spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with our children and not actually be present to them. Kids know. I mean, even the toddlers can tell when you're really just over here, you know, just checking your phone. So the gift of focused time is really important. And it's not like you have to spend 24 hours a day, you know, face to face. It's really about quality over quantity. And one thing I have recommended clients do is just have this an allotted time, like 5 minutes, start there, right? Where this is your special 5 minute connection time. You're going to focus completely on the child. Let it be child led as much as possible. What do they want to do? Enter their world, right? So we're setting distractions aside. And we really want it to be a time of connection and not correction. Even if your child is doing something that you would normally correct in that time, we're going to ignore it. You can kind of let them know it's not okay just by not engaging a little bit with their, if they're doing something, and then turn back. But it's really give them your undivided attention, mirror what they're doing, you know, reflect back to them things that they're saying. Just those little chunks of time are going to build that connection and build trust between you. So if you have multiple children, it can feel overwhelming. If you overscheduled busy days, but that's why just start with the 5 minutes, and you might be surprised that, it just naturally extended into 10 minutes or half an hour. But that's just a pretty simple place to start building connection. Stories, even your teenagers reading out loud together is a really safe way of building connection, where you don't have to have that face-to-face conversation. I'm asking you questions. How are you doing? I've found that some beautiful conversations have come out of reading because something that we read stands out, and then it just opens the door for more conversation. And it's, I mean, you have to be there. You have to be fully present in the moment with your children for that. And then just remembering playful engagement. The language of children is play, and children who have been through hard things lose that. And it's one of the best ways of disarming fear, resetting our nervous system, is to be able to get into a playful state of mind. And it doesn't have to be just playing, but you can make your everyday things playful. You know, you're singing a song on your way to you know, depending on the age of the child. But just thinking through a little bit, how can we make our days more playful? And it's something I've really had to relearn myself as an adult. We really lose that, but it's amazing what it can change for a child if we approach things in a more playful manner.
You're right. Like, it is, I didn't think about that, but it is disarming an adult. It disarms an adult to be more playful because right. It makes you get out of yourself but also, you know, children grow, you know, you would expect the playfulness to stay. And if they're experiencing certain traumas, like they shy away from it or they hide from it. And I think that's a really, beautiful insight because I think we just assume that children, you know, they're playful already, but sometimes you have to relearn. And just like you said, relearn and reteach.
Right. And it depends on the levels, you know, of trauma. Obviously, with foster care, we've experienced more extreme things than what your average family is going to experience. But with the play, we just had an experience where it was a really good example. Had a child who was very, very dysregulated, which is common for trauma. They have a very hard time regulating emotions. And it's another thing that TBRI would help you with, is really helping a child regulate. They have no ability. We're regulating with them for them. But this particular child was having a really hard time, and in rocking, he was playing with a little action figure, and he kind of had his own little narrative going with it. And he did something with it, and it was a clue that he's using this to tell his story. And again, for the sake of privacy, I won't go into all the details of what it was, but it was through playing with an action figure in a setting of being, his body was being relaxed by rocking. He was having connection with an adult. His body was feeling safe enough, and it was to this action figure, not to the adult, not to the person, that some of his story and what had happened started to come out. And so if you are present, right, present enough, aware, you will probably learn things through how a child is playing and what they're doing in their own play. So it's just really like keying in to some of those things and being present enough to your child to notice. Again, you know, kind of letting some of those distractions go and knowing that we've got to really be aware and in tune with what our children are doing and experiencing.
That's amazing. I want to go back. You had mentioned in the very beginning about your journey of, you know, being good girl, bad girl, and then saved, or, you know, just finding Christ. And I'm curious, what's the role of your faith in your own healing, but also how could your faith play a role in your child's healing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. For me, it was such a journey. Like I said, I grew up in a Christian home with faith, and I had to work through the mistakes that I made, and I carried a lot of shame just for the poor decisions that I made that put me in positions to experience what I experienced. Cause I kept feeling like, well, if I hadn't made those decisions, I wouldn't have been there and this wouldn't have happened. So I carried the weight of it being my fault for a long time. Yes, bad things happened to me, and I was able to recognize that and know on an intellectual level that those things were not my fault, but inside I carried that it was my fault. And for me, I was more able to accept that God forgives me than like forgiving myself. I had to get to a point of forgiving myself for those things before I could experience healing. And that was really a journey of really getting to know the Lord on a deeper level and understanding his character, and that, you know, he is forgiving. And by me carrying unforgiveness toward myself and really holding on to the mistakes that I made, I kind of came to a point of realizing that that was really dismissive of the power of God to forgive, and that he can forgive me, but, oh, I've got to carry this as it, you know, in a way it was prideful. Mm-hmm. Like my own stuff is so much worse than everybody else's, you know, that how can I forgive these things? And so just understanding the heart of the gospel and what that is and what Christ has done for us, it truly wipes the slate clean. And when you're forgiven, you're free, but you really have to understand and accept that at a deep level. And for your children too, then just talking through what the gospel is, what Jesus has done for us, in terms that children can understand. And sometimes they understand it way better than we do, right? Because it's the childlike faith, the simple things. I think sometimes children have an easier time getting to that point than we do. Does that answer your question?
No, beautiful. That's awesome. Yes. It's a good reminder to think about children and their childlike faith that mm-hmm. Christ even said in the gospel to imitate.
Right.
So that's beautiful. And kind of as we wrap up, if you could give one piece of advice to parents that would help them understand their children's needs and how they can help them in their experiences of, you know, trauma and help them heal, what piece of advice would you give to parents?
I guess I would go back to really the heart of TBRI and the connection piece that we talked about, because, well, there's a statement that we learn that Dr. Purvis uses in TBRI, is that what was broken in relationship can be healed in relationship with a healthy, nurturing adult. And it takes intentionality to be that healthy and nurturing adult. Whether your child has experienced big traumas or not, I think that, again, going back to just the culture of distraction that we're in, it's so easy to slide into just doing the next thing, getting by. But the gift of presence to your child, building just a really stable, solid relationship, so that if things do happen, if they have not experienced trauma, wonderful. If they do, they'll be more likely to come to you and talk to you about it if you have already built that foundation of security and trust and deep connection. And if they have experienced big traumas and those big behaviors can be really, really hard to live with on a day-to-day basis, I'd say just don't give up on them. Don't give up on them. They need someone to believe in them, to just be with them through all those big behaviors. Don't be afraid of getting professional support for them or for you as you walk through this journey. That's a really important piece, because it's a big topic. There's so many layers that come with it. And just don't be afraid of reaching out for help. And pray. Pray for your children. I think we underestimate the power of prayer. I saw something recently about, I can't remember exactly how it was phrased, but that prayer is the most powerful and loving thing that we can do for another individual. I mean, we're bringing them before the creator of the universe. And I just don't think we should underestimate the impact that prayer will have for our children.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on a show. I'd love if you could share a little bit about what you do. And then also you have some news about a book potentially coming out?
Yeah, that's been in the works for a while. As a foster parent, we have kids in and out, and we've had a little one with us actually for the last, we're almost at a year and a half now, and we're moving toward adoption with him. So I've taken a little bit of a break from my one-on-one coaching, but I do have several coaching packages that I take people through. One of them would be more about this topic. That's called Loving the Wounded Child. And that I've worked with parents to really just help their children and help recognize behaviors and things. And so all that information is all available on my website, lindsayzitzman.com. I have another one, Unshackled, which is really more geared toward an adult working through kind of their things. And then just some more, just more generalized life coaching, life on purpose. How do we live on purpose and really align the way that we live with our beliefs and our values? So been working on a book for a while, my story. I'm going the self-publishing route, so I don't have an official release date, but I'm hoping that by this fall we'll be able to see that come out.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And we are excited. We're really grateful for your sharing your insights with us. And we look forward to potentially maybe speaking to you again soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2024, we want to reach as many people as possible. You can help by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovshrine.org.